This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hello and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here this week, somehow, with Waj, who should probably be sleeping. I don't know.
I will not be sleeping for another 11 years.
Okay. How old is the newest baby in your house?
My newest baby is officially 1 week old as of 10:34 p.m. in about 5 hours.
Congratulations. And oh my God, you've had quite a year.
Yes. Yeah. My wife is a superstar. We were in the hospital because our 3-year-old Nuseba was there for her post chemo checkup. So we were there for a week. And then this new baby, Khadija, dropped 10 days early. So my wife went from Children's and just crossed over to Georgetown, dropped the baby, and then came back. And then we were in the hospital for a couple more days, and then we came home.
Man, you've got this down to like a process. Very efficient.
Yeah. You can't freak out about this stuff. Look, we survived 3 years of Trump, survived our baby's cancer scare. You know, this is, I ain't got time to bleed, to quote Jesse the Body Ventura from the American classic, The Predator.
Yeah, well, apparently your wife doesn't either, because that is some ninja baby delivery right there.
Wife is super badass.
So this week we've had, a lot of updates on the impeachment front. Most importantly, probably, we have had approximately 10 million pages of transcripts get released.
You read all of them, right?
Well, it was extremely unfortunate timing because I was traveling all last week, didn't really have a moment to myself, and I couldn't read any of them hardly on the go. I tried to skim some that came out, but I never got a moment to sit down, other than like half an hour on a plane, to go through and read them. So I got back in yesterday, and then on Monday I was sitting there and I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to possibly get through all this, and I kind of don't want to now. Because it's not so bad when they're coming in, like, you know, a couple a day, and you have time to, like, you know, read a few every day. When you're a week behind, it seems like extremely overwhelming.
I'm a week behind because we just dropped our third, and we're in the hospital, and I'm just like, what? And I, you know, you and I were like, you know, it's my job to be kind of up to date with the stuff because of CNN, and I am just trying my best to just catch up, like, from yesterday's. And then as I'm catching up from yesterday's, preparing for today, you know, we find out about the inspector general. Apparently, there's a New York Times article that Trump wants to fire the inspector general Atkinson. And then tomorrow we have the hearings and they're calling Kent and Yovanovitch and Taylor. And I'm like, all right, fine. Maybe someone could do a Cliff Notes. Maybe you could do the Cliff Notes for us, Susan. You excel at that.
Except I'd have to read first myself. And
skills.
Yeah.
But you failed us. You failed us.
I did. And full disclosure, I am way behind and I cannot guarantee I'm going to catch up anytime soon. However, I did at least catch on the disturbing scale, probably 8 or 9 from Trump, where he's tweeting out that the transcripts from the House that Schiff is releasing are probably doctored somehow, have been changed, and that they shouldn't be relied on, and that the Republicans should release their own version of the transcripts.
Devin Nunes, he's going to be busy late at night typing away while having his trained monkeys type away on the computer.
But even he's not going to do that because he knows that the witnesses come in and sign off on the deposition transcripts. So it's not possible for them to have a copy that's different than the official copy.
But it's just disinformation, right? It's disinformation, it's so confusion, which actually works really well with Trump's base because it promotes the existing narrative, which is so dangerous and now completely mainstream, that there is a deep state conspiracy where everyone who's critical of Trump is a never-Trumper and part of this cabal. But what it also, I think what's even more disturbing is he's hoping in his desperation and criminality and corruption that someone will actually do this for him. Like they will actually bring in like some doctored transcripts.
And he also thinks it's possible it flatly is not a thing that could or will happen. But it does show some of the, again, the paradox of the Trump presidency is his massive hold over the Republican base and over GOP in general. But at the same time, he's a weak and ineffectual leader who can just yell out crazy orders all over the place. And he's just ignored. And everyone understands that he's not going to be obeyed and that they can just feel free to pretend that the old man running in the corner isn't saying anything.
It's like, yeah, remember, I think it was Bob Woodward's book, Fear, where they just straight up like removed papers from his desk Right? They're like, oh, he might like make a disastrous decision. Let's just remove it from his desk. Like, you know how you remove things from a child's view, and they just like within 10 seconds they forget about it. That's exactly how like policy was run. Apparently, Gary Cohn did that a couple of times. Apparently, that's what they gave advice to do to like other people. Apparently, Mattis was sitting there and saying, "Yeah, we're not going to do that." They just like casually ignored him and his destructive impulses. But what happens when he cleans the house? There's no Mattis, there's no Cohn, there's no Tillerson, there's no Bolton, and it's just shameless yes men and yes women like Nikki Haley around
Well,
who
it's
do whatever.
are
You know,
just
I mean, that's
nothing
the
burgers
scary.
like Mulvaney, who are ineffectual and are chosen because they're ineffectual.
That's what I'm saying.
We need an adult in the room to put up a blind over the window so that Trump can't see the mailman walking by and freak out.
Or and hide all the Sharpie markers also.
So, in other impeachment news or impeachment inquiry news, we had the strangest developments from Mulvaney that I still haven't really fully processed. Other than that, earlier in the week, he decided to file to intervene in the lawsuit by Kupperman and Bolton, where they are trying to get the judiciary to sort out whether they have to testify before the House impeachment inquiry. And Mulvaney's like, well, I've been subpoenaed, I'm going to join them. And that's one, interesting. Why is Mulvaney doing that? Like, why is this his strategy? And then two, Kupperman was like, oh, hell no, you're not getting into my lawsuit. We're not letting you in as a new intervener plaintiff because, well, one, you've already spoken publicly about these topics, so you'd probably sabotage the whole thing for the rest of us. And two, you're in a different situation than we are. So Mulvaney then withdrew his attempt to intervene, said he was going to file his own lawsuit, a parallel suit to Kupperman's. And then I think today or yesterday, he's like, actually, no, never mind. I'm just not going to show up and not say. I'm going to say Trump told me not to talk, so I'm not going to talk at all.
I'm going to claim a privilege that has never existed anywhere except in the mind of Trump. And also, I'm going to go on television and openly admit that it was quid pro quo and tell America to get over it. And also, I'm going to try to join the lawsuit of Kupperman and Bolton. And Bolton was the one who said he wants no part of the drug deal that is being cooked up by Mulvaney and Son. Like, just I'm just want to connect the dots for people. Just because sometimes Mulvaney does stuff and we just kind of brush it off and we're just like, yeah, he's. You have to like kind of explain why he's such a nothing burger.
We're not brushing it off. It's just I don't even understand what like it does. It certainly doesn't look like the acts of someone with a grand strategy. He is just kind of bouncing, ping-ponging between positions, and it's given how chaotic his positioning has been, it's hard to discern where he actually stands in all of this. Clearly, he still stands on the side of Trump, but he has his own interests to look out for, and I'm not even able to venture a guess about what he thinks is his best route going forward.
Your problem, Susan, remains that you're a very competent individual who tries to project that competence in, onto incompetent people.
I mean, in this case, there just isn't. I mean, there's no tea leaves to read because he's just. I don't know. I don't know what his game is. So whatever.
Like, literally, the dude went in front of the press and on television said, "Yeah, we do quid pro quo, get over it."
We do it all
And
the
he was alleged.
time.
And so. When you have Trump and Giuliani and Mulvaney literally looking into the camera and admitting it, it's very hard to come up with a coherent, brilliant strategy or to think that you're capable of coming up with a brilliant, coherent strategy when quid pro quo is being admitted to and it is a crime or at the very least an impeachable offense. Like, this is, you're dealing with some of the most incompetent, self-destructive criminals that we have ever seen hold power. In America. And it's just like, but the problem is they have power. And so we're like the logical people, like the rest of us are like, why are you doing this? This makes no sense. And they're like, just hold my beer. Wait, let me just one up this. And then you have Rudy Giuliani butt dialing people, journalists, like sensitive information. Like that's literally where we are in 2019 America, that Rudy Giuliani is butt dialing journalists.
He's been doing
Awesome.
that for a long time, but Mulvaney's not the only one playing weird games. Bolton is firmly in the weird game playing camp, but I am much more willing to believe there's some kind of strategy behind that or some kind of play he's making. Although I also don't know what it is there. Bolton announced earlier this week through his attorney that, quote, Bolton was personally involved in many of the events, meetings, and conversations at the heart of the House impeachment inquiry, as well as many relevant meetings and conversations that have not yet been discussed. According to his attorney, Bolton was personally involved in many of the events, meetings, and conversations about which you have already received testimony, as well as many relevant meetings and conversations that have not yet been discussed in testimonies so far. Yeah, so he's basically saying, oh, you really want to hear from me, guys. I know some important stuff you're not even talking about yet. He's also sort of trying to bait the Democrats by suggesting he's not unwilling to testify if he can get a court order telling him to. And also, even aside from that, he's sort of flashed his willingness to get up there and tell what he knows. And he has a book to sell, so he's got that going for him.
There you go.
But, well, that can't be all of it. That cannot be all of it. I totally believe he is trying to cash in on this book, but that doesn't fully explain his strategy here.
I think it's threefold. John Bolton, at the end of the day, is going to be the one who walks out smiling, twirling his mustache, because he's the one who saw how disastrous this was, unleashed Fiona Hill to go follow Sondland, right, and the Ukrainian representatives to find out what was happening. He was the one who told Lieutenant Colonel Vindman to write up a letter, a memo that he would then, take to Trump at his estate as to why, the funds should be released. Like, he's been keeping a paper trail, right? And he's the one who allegedly said he wants no part of this drug deal cooked up by Sondland and Mulvaney, which was to, it seems to extort Ukraine. So I think he's going to be the smart man out, number one. He's going to get paid because he has a lot of juicy details that he's probably going to hint and tease but not reveal. And number three, I also think it's the ego and arrogance of Bolton. Remember how he was unceremoniously dumped? And he's the one who went around telling people that's not how it went down. So there's going to be some shivving, but he can't dig the knife or dagger way too into Trump because he also has to maintain relations with other right-wingers and conservatives once he comes out. So he's trying to play all sides against the middle. And I think he's going to be the one who wins in the end. That's my take on why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, Felix Sater's the ultimate winner. Whatever happens, I still think he gets first place for...
He's going to win. It's good. Well played, Bolton.
I've never been someone who is good at clothes. I don't like shopping, which is probably part of it. I don't follow fashion. I don't have time for that. But as an attorney and someone who makes a lot of public appearances and meets a lot of new people for my work, looking good and stylish put together matters a lot to me. And that's why I love Stitch Fix. You want to know why celebrities look so good all the time? Not because they're amazing, perfect geniuses of clothing. They have personal stylists to make sure their outfit is always on point. And with Stitch Fix, you could afford to have the same professional stylist curate your look too. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that delivers your favorite clothing, shoes, and accessories directly to you. Stitch Fix has the brands that you know and love, plus exclusive styles that you won't find elsewhere. All you do to sign up is complete a style profile, and your expert personal stylist will send you a hand-picked box of items based on your style and preferences. With Stitch Fix, everyone can look their best. They have solutions for women, men, and kids all over the US and now also in the UK. So if you, too, want to look like you're fashionable and know what you're doing when you don't really know at all, get Stitch Fix today. Get started at stitchfix.com/45th and get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th, stitchfix.com/45th. Well, Bolton today, he came out, not today, but he gave a recent speech to a private audience. At Morgan Stanley, or at least Morgan Stanley clients. And he talked about how he was most frustrated with the Trump's policy with regards to Turkey. And Bolton told the group that, although there was, broad bipartisan alignment on how to handle Turkey, especially when it started to buy stuff from Russia, Trump was kind of standing alone in resistance to the move. Yeah, and that it seemed bizarre and unreasonable to him. And that, quote, Bolton believes there is a personal or business relationship dictating Trump's position on Turkey because none of his advisors are aligned with him on the issue.
Interesting.
Yes.
Most interesting.
But on the one hand, sure, that makes total sense. But anyone could speculate that. I mean, Bolton's not claiming he has inside knowledge about why Trump is doing this. But it is notable that even insiders find it odd and alarming that there's times when there is broad consensus, or at least there's a few competing views, and Trump is out of left field. There's, as far as Bolton can tell, there's no advisor in Trump's ear urging him to take this action. It's him independently, for his own reasons that he's not explained, taking a contrary view to the U.S. government and everyone else around him, and taking either pro-Russian or pro-Turkey views. And Bolton's way of explaining that is that there is some kind of personal financial relationship.
Well, and Erdogan is visiting the White House today. And I say today because that's when people will be listening to this podcast.
Yeah. So that is, I mean, the business relationship idea is one possibility. In fact, Trump himself has acknowledged such a conflict might exist. Here is Trump in 2015 in a Breitbart interview.
What would, if your plan in prosecuting this war as commander in chief of the United States, if you're elected president in prosecuting the war, what do you do with Turkey? Is Turkey a reliable partner? I know they're a NATO ally. Are they a reliable partner?
Well, I also have, I have a little conflict of interest because I have a major, major building in Istanbul, and it's a tremendously successful job. It's called Trump Towers, two towers instead of one, not the usual one, it's two. And I've gotten to know Turkey very well, and they're amazing people. They're incredible people. They have a strong leader.
Yeah, I can only hope that tomorrow at his, I mean, I assume they're doing a joint press conference, him and Erdogan. And if they do, I hope to God someone brings up this to ask him about, because he himself acknowledges he's got a financial problem with being harsh on Turkey. And here he is inviting Turkey to the White House after all of its recent actions.
And also the letter. Remember that Trump voluntarily released his letter to Erdogan? He released it to a Fox News a reporter. And in that letter,
Don't be a fool.
And you better not, like, you know, go and attack the Kurds. I'll crush your economy. Call me later. And so what happened the day that allegedly that was dated? Erdogan threw that letter in the trash, attacked and invaded northern Syria, killed Kurds, is still killing Kurds. And now Turkey and Russia are on the ground controlling northern Syria. That's what happened. And so you have to really kind of ask yourself, why did Trump do it? What happened in that phone call? Where is the transcript of that call? And like you mentioned and hinted at before, I mean, it was one of those rare rebukes because it was like overwhelming. If I remember correctly, the House vote was 348, right, condemning Trump. And I think there was only like a few who sided with him. That was a stinging rebuke to his decision to pull the troops and abandon our allies. So it has to be, in my opinion, again, we don't know, but what else could it be? It helped Trump's bottom line, Trump Towers, and it helped Russia. Putin dreamt about having boots on the ground, and now he is the major player, literally controlling northern Syria with Erdogan. I mean, it's like it was a beautiful birthday present for Putin. Beautiful.
I mean, perfect. It doesn't have to be that because there's other options too. It's kind of the same thing with the Zelensky issue. Is it extortion or bribery? Who knows? Either way, it's wrong. It could be instead of offering a carrot, Erdogan is holding a stick over Trump's head in terms of something he knows that Trump wouldn't want to get out. And given how lax Trump is with security and how open he is with making statements to foreign leaders that could be incriminating or he wouldn't want to have publicly revealed, yeah, it's not at all inconceivable that there's some kind of leverage that Erdogan would have over him. Although it's hard to think that it could be of this extreme magnitude where he's giving Erdogan everything he's asking for lately. Anyway, whether by coincidence or design, the White House visit by Erdogan is scheduled for tomorrow, which is also the day that public testimony begins in the impeachment inquiry.
What's going to happen with that one? I wonder how many furious tweets he's going to launch. I say at least 35.
I don't even read his tweets anymore. Like, I might catch one here or there, but like, no one even cares about. There's so many of them. They're always the same thing. You can't even really tell if it's a new one half the time because it's the same language he always uses. It's just boring. They don't matter. He's definitely losing effectiveness with them.
And he deleted a tweet yesterday where he was praising Sean Spicer, but Sean Spicer, of course, lost finally and was eliminated from Dancing with the Stars.
Trump cannot handle the idea that his endorsement is insufficient to guarantee victory. So when he told everyone to vote for Spicer and Spicer lost Dancing with the Stars, he's like, I never actually endorsed him. Just delete this tweet.
And there's three losses he's had this week, right? Just for those keeping track. The Sean Spicer loss, the fact that he finally found a crowd that would cheer him and not boo him in Alabama, and Alabama like lost its home game with Trump in attendance, which if you follow college football, like they never lose home games. And also the awesome Kentucky governor's race loss, where he goes there the day before and says, hey, you have to vote for him, and historic upset, and the Democrat wins.
And he's now claiming that his endorsement gave 18 points to, what's his name, Bevin. As if, like, if the Republican governor is down that much in Kentucky, there are bigger issues. But he's just making his numbers up.
He was never down. He was never down that. And also remember the same thing he said in North Carolina with the special election, just made up numbers. And that came down to the wire, which it shouldn't have, because that's a ruby red district that's went Trump like in double digits.
Oh, but Trump is quick to point out that Mississippi did well for Republicans.
Mississippi. Good.
That's what he's reduced to bragging about, is Republicans can still win in Mississippi. So this week we have three witnesses scheduled for public testimony, Bill Taylor, George Kent, and Yovanovitch. All of whom have testified in depositions and all of whom have had the transcripts released, but like I've read only one of them. So, but we know mostly, like we have a good idea of what they're going to be saying, which is probably why they're coming first, because they can help set the stage for the rest of the testimony to come. We also had this week, the GOP released its witness list of who it wants to call for impeachment hearings. And the list consists of 1, Devin Archer, 2, Hunter Biden, 3, Alexander Chalupa, 4, David Hale, 5, Tim Morrison, 6, Nellie Orr, 7, Kurt Volker, 8, the whistleblower. And then finally, all individuals relied upon by the anonymous whistleblower in drafting his or her secondhand complaint. So this list only makes, well, I mean, the Biden stuff, Devin Archer and Hunter Biden are connected to Burisma. And that makes sense if you're just trying to, you know, throw trash around and smear the Bidens. So that makes sense. But the rest of that list is basically a list you call if you believe that all the crazy conspiracy theories that Trump has endorsed that are totally baseless are somehow accurate. And that's what you're going to prove, is that Ukraine and not Russia was the one that interfered in the 2016 election. And that this was all a plot by Democrats.
Even those four, like, they think they have a winner with Morrison, who resigned.
He was with the National Security Council. I think he's like him and Volker. They're definitely on the list. So it's
That's what I'm saying. They think that's where they can sow some disinformation and doubt. But no, I don't think so at all. I think their testimonies, if they are consistent with what they've already said, are going to be pretty damning. I mean, this is not going to help them at all, because they'll have Morrison and Volker, whom they think they can give them some sort of tidbit to like lead with the disinformation counter narrative. But again, if they just rely upon their consistent testimony, it's still damning. And if they bring the whistleblower, he's going to corroborate everything that was said by people like Ambassador Taylor. And so I don't see an out here for the Republicans other than promoting, like you said, the insane Ukraine gate conspiracy theory and deep state. That's all they have.
Yeah. Volker has said that he did not personally see any proof or hear any demands from Trump for quid pro quo. So they're going to use him to say, hey, there was none if he didn't hear it. And Morrison said in his deposition that he did not believe, in his personal opinion, that what Trump said in the July 25th call with Zelensky was criminal. But that's what they want him. They think he's a big win for them. It's this one person thinks that something Trump said on the phone was not overtly criminal.
In his personal opinion, he was very careful in how he worded it as well.
And it's also irrelevant to what's going on with the impeachment inquiry. So that's what they want. And the Chalupa stuff has to do with Manafort and more of the insane idea that, again, it was Ukraine that has a server somehow. I mean, to go back to Trump's question from long ago, can you impeach a president for gross incompetence? And if so, I mean, this belief in the stupid conspiracy theory should be all you need to impeach Trump. It's not, because that's not the world we live in. But it's alarming that he's not only endorsing this himself, but he's getting Republicans to endorse it publicly.
It's not just alarming. He has sent his handpicked Attorney General, Bill Barr, all across the world to try to dig up information on this insane debunked conspiracy theory that would undermine the Department of Justice that he leads. Like, literally, our taxpayer money is being used for Bill Barr to go to Italy, and then the Italian Prime Minister, it was like 2 weeks ago in the New York Times, is like, we do not believe these conspiracy theories. That's actually what's happening. You would think in normal times that would actually be the leading news, that the Attorney General is using taxpayer money to go around the world and try to come up with evidence for a debunked conspiracy theory. But that is news item number 27 in the Trump administration.
Well, Trump also has his own list of witnesses he thinks should be called for the impeachment inquiry. They include, unsurprisingly, Pelosi and Schiff, and also the intelligence community inspector general, Atkinson, who, as just reported earlier Tuesday evening, Trump has been talking about firing because of his disloyalty and not covering up the Ukraine call.
Yeah, disloyalty. Disloyalty to him is everything. And to most of us, it's retaliation. And It's how authoritarians run their countries. Do you want to quash all criticism? And let's remind people that this is the inspector general who was deemed respected, truthful, professional, and credible by Trump's own appointed director of national intelligence, McGuire, in his televised testimony.
Well, he was loyal. He did try and cover it up. But the whole point of an IG for any institution is that you have a watchdog. You have someone who is loyal to the agency as a whole or the organization as a whole. They're there to monitor the inner workings of the agency for the agency's behalf. Like, loyalty to the president doesn't even remotely come into play to an even less degree than it would for anywhere else in the civil service.
But according to the New York Times article,
the aides aren't even denying this. There's no one in the White House saying he's not trying to do that or not saying these things. But that, quote, Mr. Trump believes he has the power to fire anyone in the executive branch, though aides say they have learned to ignore many of his private rants, unless the president brings up the subject repeatedly and appears on the precipice of making a move they feel could be damaging. So again, the weakest, strongest president in history is just ignored when he goes on rants until he's ran to such a degree that people around him think he might try and blow himself up, and then they try and stop it. So yeah, I mean, this is not, on the one hand, this sort of willy-nilly firing of staff perceived to be disloyal is nothing new. DHS, Department of Homeland Security, has been very much a victim of having its ranks culled by Trump's firing of personnel there who he doesn't see as being tough enough or strong enough or endorsing his illegal and unconstitutional theories of how it should be run. And
how about Jeff Sessions? Remember him?
Yep, barely, vaguely. Wasn't he that guy from Alabama?
Yeah, he's running for senator against some winners. So let's see if he gets Trump validation. I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, in September, Trump fired the DHS general counsel for no explained reason. And the unexplained reason, of course, that no one really disputes or no one really could dispute is that Trump didn't like the general counsel because he was objecting to the actions Trump wanted to do on the grounds they're illegal or unconstitutional. So Trump fired him, which is not a reason you can fire a Senate-confirmed position. In fact, back in April, GOP was getting alarmed by how much Trump was firing people in DHS, and they went on the record to say that this needed to stop. In fact, Senator Ron Johnson said that he was worried that Mitnick, the now former general counsel for DHS, could be dismissed, and that he is preparing a letter to the administration advising against even considering getting rid of the counsel. Johnson emphasized that Mitnick was a consensus pick, having been confirmed unanimously to the job. You need management in the department, and particularly a counsel that will shoot straight, Johnson said. I just think the current counsel is a good person, and we want to make sure he stays on the job. Yeah, and then, of course, after Johnson goes to all this effort to try and preserve Mitnick's position, Trump goes ahead and fires him anyway. And then the reaction? Crickets.
Well, that Johnson has completely become the boot heel of Trump, embarrassing himself time and time again, promoting conspiracy theories, let's not forget, on live television, anything to give cover to Trump. And that's what Trump does, right? Like I was talking to, just some Republican strategists in the green room. And they're like, each time we go out and try to do our job, like Trump literally throws a grenade and blows it up. Like, oh, did you actually say that Jews are disloyal? No, he would never say that. Then you ask Trump again, did you say that? He goes, yes, they're being disloyal to Israel. And they're like, oh, crap. And so that's Trump. That's what you're going to get. He perceives loyalty to him to be paramount above all else. Every single document and interview with Trump during this presidency, every book that we've read, it's like the same line, Susan. It's like loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. But it's not loyalty to the Constitution, not to ethics, not to conservative ideology. It's a loyalty to Trump. And he fluctuates like a temperamental child. And voila, chaos.
Long before I'd even heard about Ritual, Robbie was already a huge fan and talking it up to me and saying how great it was and how it's the best vitamin she's ever been on. And now I'm a huge fan too, because Ritual is the obsessively researched vitamin for women. Ritual's essentials have the nutrients that most of us don't get enough of from food, all in their clean, absorbable forms. There are no shady additives or ingredients that can do more harm to your body than good. For Ritual, all you do is take two easy-to-take capsules twice a day, and they provide 9 nutrients that you need to support a strong foundation for your health. I like Ritual because it's a great way to get the vitamins you need, but I really like Ritual because of how convenient it is. Ritual comes straight to your door, and you can snooze your plan at any time. And for obsessive label readers, All of Ritual's vegan-friendly, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten-free, and allergen-free ingredients and their sources are out there for the whole world to see. It's only a dollar a day to have all the essential nutrients your body needs delivered straight to your door every month, no strings attached. Better health doesn't happen overnight. And right now, Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th. Well, we have a new voice who has been absent for a bit, come back onto the cable news circuit, and that is Nikki Haley, who is not disputing that she is, in fact, angling to take over Pence's job for 2020.
Yeah, so speaking about loyalty, she knows the game, right? Nikki Haley is not stupid. She knows exactly how to play Trump's psychological and emotional buttons. Trump has praised her, promoted her book. Nikki Haley on the TV circuit this week openly says that, oh, I find him to be truthful and believable. This is the same man who's lied over 11,000 times. I believe it might almost be 12,000. I haven't checked the Washington Post fact checker yet. And Nikki Haley is, you know, is taking a cue from All About Eve. And, you know, she's going after the big guns. She thinks she can replace a vulnerable Pence. And then guess what? Nikki Haley has her sights on the Oval Office.
For 2024. But she, when she was in office, when she was the UN ambassador, she was a fairly standalone voice in the administration that she kept her distance from Trump. She did not fawn over him the way others did. She did not praise his more insane, batshittery moves. She did, to a degree, keep her independence and keep her credibility intact. And now, suddenly, after getting out of office and having time to herself and to rehabilitate her image, she's going full in on the crazy. In fact, here's what she had to say about Tillerson and Kelly.
Secretary of State at the time, Rex Tillerson, and his chief of staff, John Kelly. You said that you told the president that he had these two folks who were working against him. What was the president's response? Do you remember what he said?
Well, I'm not going to get into the president's response. What I'll tell you is I never wanted to be part of the drama at the White House or in D.C. And so I tried to stay away from it. So when this first happened, the first person I went to was the National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster. And he knew, too. I mean, he was struggling to get things done, and they were stalling with him as well. And his job was to implement the president's policy. And so he was as frustrated as I was, but he was the first one I went to. And then, obviously, you know, telling the president, it's you want to protect what his role is. The people voted for him to carry out his policies, and he didn't deserve to have people that were undermining, thinking that they knew more than him. It's hard to get elected. I know that as governor. The last thing you need is someone who's unelected thinking that they can go. And this was just on policy discussions. This was on the Iran deal. This was on Paris climate. This wasn't on him being, you know, out there not being able to control himself. Yeah. This was the fact that they disagreed with his policies and stalled what he wanted to do because they didn't agree with him. And that's just not what you do. It undermines the Constitution.
How surprised were you that the president decided to keep both of them on board, even after you told him?
Well, they're gone. So I told him in due time, and he figured it out on his own, and the rest he was able to figure out.
Yeah, and then, of course, we had Tillerson come back and say, oh, he would never seek to do anything to undermine the president by giving him advice about stuff he didn't want to do. I mean, Nikki Haley has given you an out, dude. Tillerson, you should have taken it. She'd been like, hell yeah, I tried to stop him from blowing us all up.
but you know what? Nikki realizes where the wind is blowing. And what we've said on the show many times before is Trumpism will outlast Trump. And this is the future of the Republican Party. And she realizes that she has to ride the orange ship. That's it. It's a very Faustian bargain. And she realizes that if she goes against Trump, if you go against Trump, you're not going to win. You're just not. And so, but if you go with Trump, you're going to get corrupted and tainted, and you're going to be, you know, ultimately betrayed, and Trump will throw you under the bus. So it's like you choose your poison. How do you want to die? And I think by hitching on to Trump, you can at least have a short-term leash to get power and money. And I think that's the bargain that Nikki Haley has made. She goes, I will ride Trump to the White House, and then I'll pivot.
Well, I had suspicions that she was the anonymous op-ed writer, who also is a forthcoming book. But I think her interview on cable news this week put an end to that, because here's what she had to say about the whole Zelensky thing.
This was a perfect call. Do you think this was a perfect call?
If in his mind he thinks it was a perfect
call.
What
do you think?
You know, I think it's never a good practice for us to ask a foreign country to investigate an American. It's just not a good practice. Having said that, there's no insistence on that call. There are no demands on that call. It is a conversation between two presidents that's casual in nature. And, you know, it's just hard to find anywhere that the president of Ukraine would have thought funds were being held and that he had to do this.
Well, I mean, as a backdrop, and you, among all people, know how important these funds are to Ukraine. You were one of the leading voices on behalf of Ukraine against Russian aggression. They always know that the funding of their military is hanging over their heads, do they not?
But they also know that President Trump has been very strong for Ukraine by giving anti-tank missiles, by going against Russia, holding the sanctions, expelling
diplomats. The aid was on hold at that moment. The aid did go on hold. It eventually was released.
You know, you can have those hypotheticals. It was released. That's a fact.
The aid was held up. That is not a hypothetical, right?
Was the aid released? It was.
Okay. You know, one of the things when we talk about the call, and you said, you know, I think I won't put words in your mouth. I think you said it's really not advisable to have someone asking, a president asking for a political favor like that, asking for an investigation into an American citizen. You know, I went back, actually looked at your resignation letter, and you said, through it all, we were always placing America first. How is asking a foreign country to investigate your political rival putting America first?
Well, I think
whose interest is that in? Is it in America's interest or is it in the president's personal interest?
I mean, Ukraine has always been an issue with corruption. That was the case that we always knew that there was corruption that was involved.
Okay, but the corruption mentioned by the president here has to do with Joe Biden and the DNC server. Those are the two very specific examples.
And Americans should want to know the answer of, did Biden pressure the prosecutor to, you know, to do what he did? And I think there's a real question there. You can question the president, but you also have to question what Biden did. There may be.
Yeah, that is definitely shameful. Not the voice that, one, it's not the voice Nikki had when she was in the administration. And two, it's not the position the whistleblower's taking. Oh, no, not talking about whistleblower. I'm talking about the anonymous op-ed writer.
Oh, yeah, the anonymous individual allegedly still has that role.
Yeah.
But I think it's not Nikki Haley. I thought it was Coates at first.
No, it sounds like what the reason, my guess now is that the reason this person's anonymous is because enough of a nobody, still senior official, but enough of a nobody that if their name was on it, no one would give a shit.
How about Kristen Nielsen? I thought it was her for a while.
Nah, but I think it's a dude. I think it's probably those mid-level senior guys who are under the radar, don't really get much media attention. They are a big deal in their sphere, but at the same time, they have like almost no media profile, and even people who should know their names probably forget it because they're just that forgettable.
Maybe like a Miller lackey who's in most of the meetings, possibly.
Oh, that's no, Miller lackey is writing that. I bet it's...
You don't think so?
No way. Miller the white nationalist is...
No, I'm not saying ideological lackey. I'm talking about just like a person who does his, you know, monkey work, like someone who has access. That's what I'm saying. I don't disagree with you. I'm not saying like a person who's his yes
man. Yeah, but
like
that wouldn't be... I feel like that would be kind of very disingenuous. They're calling someone like that level a senior official.
Who do you think it is?
I think it's some, you know, senior but boring cog in the machine that wants to be anonymous because it gets more attention that way. If we put his name on it, no one would care. So...
Age white guy cog.
Most likely. Like everything else in this administration, it's most likely some middle-aged white dude. But so Nikki's Haley's statement about the Zelensky call does kind of hit on a few of the themes going on around these days about how Republicans should respond to the impeachment inquiry and respond to accusations that what Trump did was inappropriate and wrong and impeachable. I mean, thus far, the GOP has leaned heavily on process-based defenses. And they still are. They're still, you know, relying on the, oh, the process is wrong. Oh, it's no due process. Oh, it's unconstitutional. And all that. But they have started to reach a point where they have to take positions on the substance of the claims. However, currently, there is no real White House messaging body beyond Trump's Twitter feed. And that becomes readily apparent by the fact that the GOP is all over the place on their defenses.
Well, so, you have Stephanie Grisham. Right. I have to mention, I mean, people forget that we actually have a White House press secretary named Stephanie Grisham, who has been paid by your taxpayer dollars with a six-figure salary and who has not held a single White House press briefing, but has appeared multiple times on Fox News. So just for the sake of facts, you know, you have Trump's tweets and you have Stephanie Grisham appearing on Fox News.
And non-zero chance that her press releases are written by Trump himself. So with that said, let's do an overview of the various defenses that various GOP members have been staking out.
This will be very painful.
First up, we have the Sideshow Bob defense.
Convicted of a crime I didn't even commit. Attempted murder. Now, honestly, what is that? Do they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry? Do they? Oh, really? Now, this is a personal call.
This is where Republicans are saying that there's no such thing as attempted impeachable conduct. Trump didn't succeed in doing his impeachable aims. Therefore, he can't be impeached for it. Similarly, you know, just how everyone believed back in the 70s that Nixon couldn't be impeached because the Watergate break-in failed.
He's even bad at committing crimes. Listen, he tried to shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, but the gun backfired. All right. You can't blame him. There's no such thing as attempt. By the way, I'm a recovering attorney. Attempted murder is a crime. Attempted extortion is a crime. Attempted criminal act is a crime.
And also, we're not looking at crimes, looking at impeachable conduct.
That's right. This is not a court of law. This is not, you don't have the same standards. High crimes and misdemeanors as understood and defined by Congress. So these are all impeachable offenses.
But Nikki Haley was definitely previewing this defense when she talked about how, again, Trump and Zelensky did a meeting at the UN and the U.S. security money did go to Ukraine in September. And all that happened without Ukraine investigating Trump's political rivals like he requested. Therefore, since he did not succeed in getting his aims fulfilled, he shouldn't be impeached. But we found out also this week that Zelensky was on the cusp of giving in to Trump's demands. He had an interview lined up for September 13th, in which he'd be announcing the investigations into Burisma and the Biden, well, at least Hunter Biden. However, he was saved by the bell when the money started flowing without Trump's knowledge or consent on, like, the 11th, or a few days before. State figured out they didn't actually need to get OMB to sign off on it, so they went ahead and started releasing the money. And also keep in mind, like, there are actually two quid pro quos, at least, that were considered and bandied about. The first was even before the aid was held up, is when we had Trump via Giuliani, via the indicted henchmen, Parnas and Fruman, passed word that if Zelensky wanted his meeting with Trump, he'd have to investigate the Bidens. That was the initial play by Trump. Only later did it evolve to, oh, yeah, also you're not going to get $400 million in foreign assistance unless you play ball.
Which was made clear both on July 10th and on the July 25th phone call.
Yeah. I mean, the text from Volcker, the guy that the Republicans think will save them. Volcker himself is like, oh, I heard from RG that he thinks the meeting's going to be off. Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, I mean, they're not. That's the thing. Volcker is not going to help out. Like, why are you bringing Volcker? Don't, like, it's almost you want to, like, help the Republicans. Like, don't bring Volcker. This will not help you. But hey,
I mean,
all right.
Compared to the others, I mean, better than Sondland and his, like, oh, actually, yeah, there was totes quid pro quo.
Sondland, the EU ambassador who got that position thanks to a $1 million donation to Trump. And of course, Trump now says he doesn't really know Sondland that well.
Well, that brings us to the second defense the Republicans are currently previewing. And that is the Trump is too incoherent and incompetent to be capable of carrying out an impeachable offense.
He's just too stupid.
I've read the transcript for myself. I made up my own mind. Volcker, the special envoy, said there was no quid pro quo. Sunderland has changed his testimony to say he presumes there was. What I can tell you about the Trump policy toward the Ukraine, it was incoherent. It depends on who you talk to. They seem to be incapable of forming a quid pro quo. So, no, I find the whole process to be a sham, and I'm not going to legitimize it.
This is also, by the way, the Wall Street Journal's defense, which argued a week or two ago last month in an op-ed that, quote, intriguingly, Mr. Bill Taylor says in a statement that many people in the administration oppose the Rudy Giuliani effort, including some in senior positions at the White House. This matters because it may turn out that while Mr. Trump wanted a quid pro quo policy ultimatum towards Ukraine, he was too inept to execute it. Impeachment for incompetence would disqualify most of the government and most presidents at some point in, or another in office. Okay, one, this is like every president tries to break the law and coerce foreign states investigating their rivals, but most of them fail at it. And again, Nixon. Nixon did not succeed. Nixon failed spectacularly. It was an awful idea that he was incompetent carrying out. Didn't stop anyone from pressuring him to, well, ultimately resign. So this is not a, this is a very novel argument that, yeah. And you know who also doesn't like the argument? Trump himself.
Because he calls him a moron. Basically, that's what's saying. Like that, like Lindsey Graham saying, listen, our president's an idiot. And he's just too stupid and incompetent to do something like this. So like, okay, he's not a criminal, but he's really dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, Trump has several unnamed aides have gone on the record saying that Trump was very unhappy with that portrayal of why he shouldn't be impeached.
If I'm a criminal, I'm the very best criminal, the perfect criminal, the smartest criminal, the best criminal.
If I wanted to be a criminal, I would have been a criminal.
And no one could stab me. But I choose not to because I love you, MAGA.
So this week we also had a, I think, fairly new, or at least new in how explicit it was, defense that was aired, this time by Representative Thornberry. And that is the Trump does impeachable things all the damn time, so you can't impeach him for doing more impeachable stuff defense.
There's not really anything that the president said in that phone call that's different than he says in public all the time. So is there some sort of abuse of power that rises to that threshold that is different than the American people have been hearing for 3 years? I don't hear that.
Yeah, this is the defense of if you openly admit without shame to doing the criminal act, most people would be like, oh, they're openly admitting to it. Why would they admit to doing a crime? It must not be a crime.
Well, in defense of Thornberry, I think it wasn't quite that. I don't think he's saying it's not. He's saying, yeah, it could be impeachable, but he's done so much impeachable stuff and no one's taken action before that it would be inconsistent to take action now. So he's not even arguing with whether if it was impeachable conduct, just that because it wasn't done in isolation, but done as a long 3-year string of impeachable conduct, well, it would just be kind of hypocritical to finally care about it.
Guys, you gave him a pass. So let's just keep let him go. There's a statute of limitations, right? Like it was the first 7. You had your shot in the first 7. And you let the first 7 go. So let's just come on. 8 through 17. Let's just give it a pass. Let's see if he can, in fact, let's switch it up. Let's see if he can do 40 impeachable offenses. He's at 32. Let's see if he can go to 40. Let's do bets. Let's do a betting campaign. Come on. We'll do a pay-per-view and once he hits 40. Trump will probably like that. For the 40th impeachable offense, we're going to have Trump Towers, Istanbul, do a live pay-per-view event, pay the money. That would probably happen, by the way. I just kind of came up with that scenario on the fly, and I just realized that he would probably do that. But I digress.
The next impeachment defense is kind of, it dovetails with Trump's own main defense, which is the call was perfect, and also no quid pro quo. And this is a defense where Republicans are saying that because no one explicitly said, or because Trump didn't explicitly say this is a quid pro quo and it's called Zelensky, it's not impeachable or wrong. First off, the quid pro quo does not have to be present to be wrongdoing. Like that's not even necessary to be impeachable or be extreme abuse of power. Two, the quid pro quo, no one says and calls this is an illegal quid pro quo. Doesn't happen. Like, no, I mean, if anyone's going to do it, to be fair, it would probably be Trump.
Or Mulvaney.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't rule out the possibility that one of them, well, Giuliani would say it for sure. But
these are the elements of the crime. Let me outline the elements.
Setting aside the possibility that I can conceive of a world where they would do that, no one does that. And of course, they're not going to do that in the call. And the fact they didn't screw up that badly doesn't make it not wrong. Also, it's not even true because the pressure is implicit. I mean, it's a country struggling to survive and needs U.S. military aid to make it through the next day.
But yeah. It's explicit. It's explicit even in the partial transcript that was released and the actions of the president that he did not release these congressionally mandated funds. And of course, the admission of Sondland and the conversations he had in the July 10th meeting. It's like it's not even implicit. It's explicit. Like they literally almost went out of the way to say quid pro quo without – it's like taboo. And they just didn't say quid pro quo.
Well, they almost did. They almost did because Zelensky in the call actually says – he says, on the one hand, we'll arrange for a visit in the White House. On the other, I'll look into opening an investigation into the Bidens. And the way he says it in the transcript is on the other hand. But as some people who speak Ukrainian pointed out, that seems like a mistranslation. And a better phrase might have been on the flip side of the coin, which makes the quid pro quo all the more explicit. I mean, in the call, those two things are explicitly conditioned on each other. Yep. So, yeah. And the next Republican defense that they are running through right now is the everyone involved denies there was a crime, so it can't be a crime defense. Because President Zelensky and President Trump have both said there was no pressure on the call, case closed, game over.
I mean, we've talked about this. I think last month we were talking about this in October that, you know, Republicans usually are very good at spin. They're not honest. It's not ethical. It's dirty. Sure. But it does its job, right? It infects the mainstream. It sticks. And it you know, it can be repeated multiple times on cable news, on radio, TV, on, you know, via newspapers. They have not been able to come up with anything that sticks, like nothing. So like it's been a month and a half. And it just goes to show you, like, they have like the facts and Trump's own self-destructive acts and the idiocy and incompetence of like Sondland and Perry and Giuliani and Mulvaney. I don't see any out here.
Yeah, even on the list of pretty bad defenses, this one's pretty low down. And that brings us to the all these witnesses are lying defense. And worth pointing out, so far, this is actually probably the most disfavored of the defenses. Most of the GOP doesn't go there. Only a few are actually willing to embrace it. But those few include Representative Lee Zeldin, who, when asked if he thought Bill Taylor was credible as a witness, he responded, quote, "No, he is not. Second, third, fourth hand, no hand information in some cases, giving opinions in one case."
No hand information.
But still, like, it's not even totally attacking. Like, there's a few who have dipped their toes in and been like, oh, these witnesses are all just making stuff up. But no, that's, even Republicans know that's not going to be a winning strategy. You're not going to succeed in showing all these career civil servants are somehow actual deep staters. I mean, they can say deep state, but applying it to the actual facts of these witnesses is not going to work once the hearings start being public. So, yeah, that's not their favorite one. And several of representatives and the even senators have mentioned that, yeah, they find the witnesses credible. That's just not what they're saying they believe. But that's not going to justify impeachment because, well, let's take us to the next defense. The let's blame Sondland, Giuliani, and Mulvaney defense. They're going to all this stuff happened, all this stuff that like Bill Taylor and Yovanovitch and Volcker said happened. Yeah, sure, it took place. These things occurred. But Trump wasn't involved in it. It was, oh, Giuliani, Sondland, and Mulvaney scheming together to block aid to Ukraine, to use your henchmen to pressure Ukrainian officials into investigating the Bidens, and to pass word to Ukraine that if they just give a statement talking about how they're going to investigate Burisma, they'll get the White House meeting and the aid will start flowing again. Yeah, this one's not going to cut it either. They kind of seem to drop this one. It got previewed earlier this week and then they're like, I don't think even the base is going to believe this one.
And then you also run the risk of having people like Sondland and other former allies turn like Michael Cohen. That's what Trump doesn't also realize, right? Like you're stuck. Like if you throw all these guys under the bus, then what incentive do they have at all to return the key word, loyalty, back to Trump and the Republicans?
Well, to be fair, it is not Trump who has been making this defense or pushing this at all. It's been, he's not throwing them under the bus, but Republicans have been trying to throw them under the bus for him. I have not seen any sign that Trump personally is embracing this tactic.
Yeah, but he did go out of his way to say like he doesn't really know Sondland that well.
Oh, yeah, he does that. I mean, he does that for everyone. Before we get to the end of this presidency, he's not going to know Ivanka that well.
Yeah, Ivanka, I've heard of her. I think she sells clothes at JCPenney.
Yeah.
Tiffany has always been my preferred daughter.
And that brings us to the last two Republican defenses, the ones that increasingly seem to be likely to take the day and are probably the most disturbing for it. The first is the inappropriate but not impeachable defense. It may be an emerging favorite. A lot of senators, a lot of Republican congressmen are taking this line of, oh, sure. And Nikki Haley, you heard earlier, is taking this approach where, you know, sure, it's not ideal. In a perfect world, would we want that? No. We're not saying it's a great thing to do. But also, we're not saying it's that big a deal. It's not impeachable. Don't worry about it. But the one person who is not embracing this defense is Trump himself, who was angrily tweeting about how Republicans should not fall for this trap of saying the call is anything less than perfect.
They're stuck. That's what I'm saying. Anytime, like, Republicans try their best to save Trump from himself and spin it, Trump goes on and admits to doing the wrong thing, thereby literally destroying everything. I mean, like, so Republicans would be like, he did nothing wrong. And like, you know, it's perfectly fine. Yeah, there were mistakes with the phone call, but it's okay. And then Trump's going to be like, the phone call was perfect. Quid pro quo is okay. I'm fine with asking for foreign interference. And then this is why I tell the Democrats, go after the Republican senators in 2020 who are vulnerable. Gardner, you know, Tillis, McSally, Collins, and straight up ask them every day, do you think it's okay for the United States president to ask a foreign country to attack a political ally? Do you think extortion is okay and bribery is okay and obstruction of justice is okay? And if they say yes, they're stuck. So I don't see an out here, but maybe you can help take away the fog from my brain. How will this defense will work with this base? Fine. But his base, his hardcore base, is 25 to 30% max of the country. And we're already, before like the public hearings, the approval for impeachment and removal of Trump, Susan, is at 50%. How is this going to work?
Well, at the risk of reading too much into Trump's impulse-based tweets and finding strategy where there is none, Trump has used this language quite a bit, where he says, like, the trap language. Like, Republicans shouldn't budge from calling it a perfect call because it's a trap. And it's hard not to wonder if that's because Trump knows it is, in fact, a trap, and that there will be evidence coming out that Trump has done this for other countries, or that Trump has knowingly pressured the evidence of wrongdoing. We've seen some of it from the fact they tried to cover up and hide the call right after it happened. But there could be evidence from Trump himself that he was conscious of the wrongdoing, and that once that comes out, this, you know, not ideal but not impeachable thing will start to fall apart. Or, on the other hand, I find it more likely, I think Trump wants to keep doing this with other countries. And the only way he can continue doing so is to take the line that actually this is totally fine and normal. And that brings us to the last impeachment defense from Republicans. And that is the Trump totally has the power to call on foreign states to take action against his political rivals defense. I am worried that's where Republicans are actually going to end up at. And I think that is sustainable for them. It's not going to be comfortable. There'll be some who won't like it. I mean, a lot won't like it. There'll be some who have a harder time with it than others. But I think that's the current war in the Republican Party is between these last two defenses.
I know. I agree with you. I think they're going to tilt more towards authoritarianism. We've kept saying it. And they're going to enable and embolden Trump. And once Trump gets away with it, which he has, it will set the terrible precedent for future administrations, both Republican and Democrat. And I think ultimately they're going to be like, just like with everything else. Oh, he praised white nationalists. That's fine. Oh, he called them very fine people. That's fine. Oh, he promoted white conspiracy theory, which is now mainstream, about invaders. That's fine. Oh, Mexico's not going to pay for the wall. That's fine. Oh, the Muslim ban. That's fine. Oh, Jews are disloyal. That's fine. Oh, collusion. That's fine. Oh, asking for foreign interference. That's fine. Oh, extortion. That's fine. And I think ultimately you are correct, and I agree with you. That's the only out that they have, is that all this illegal, corrupt, unethical abuse of power is perfectly fine because Donald Trump is doing it. And I think their base will say the ends justify the means, and it'll just get worse.
Yeah. And what happens in a world, it's a very possible world we're heading into, where Trump is impeached but not removed for this conduct, and Republicans take the defense at his trial of this is all appropriate, normal stuff for him to do. It's all policy disagreement. These people who are testifying objected to his policy, but there's nothing impeachable about it. And policy disagreements are not appropriate for civil servants to get involved in. At that point, it'll be fully normalized, and Trump has no reason not to do this. And that's his preferred end state, and we're moving towards it.
And he's already said it in an interview with George Stephanopoulos. He said, yes, I'm perfectly fine with, he didn't say foreign interference, but if you get, you know, information from a foreign ally, he goes, you'll be stupid not to take it. So he'll just get the justification for it. He'll get the justification for retaliation, for purges.
And this was that was after that interview he gave in June was after Trump had already passed to the Ukrainians through Giuliani his request for them to investigate Biden if they won the White House meeting. So not only was it a hypothetical, it was an explicit request he'd already put out there and was waiting for a response from Ukraine on.
Yeah, and remember he finally backed away from holding the next year's G7 summit at Doral only because of the pushback. But even that's another one.
Was, I still think Merkel and maybe Macron told him they're not going to show up if he does that.
But so I'm saying, but like, it goes to your point. It's like he still didn't understand why he couldn't do it. And he was very pissed off publicly.
I don't think it was pressure from Republicans at home that caused that to end. I think it was external pressure from other foreign leaders in G7 who nixed it.
This is a Faustian bargain that will definitely harm democracy and also harm Republicans. But like we've kept saying is they will do tremendous damage before they go out. And that's the fear, is that how much damage will they do to democratic institutions, norms, people of color, immigrants, women, our allies, national security, foreign policy, before they burn themselves up? Because the vote for Trump to me was always a vote of self-immolation, much like Brexit. And I, you know, again, that's why he's so dangerous. And if he wins again, and he might because of the angry whites in the Midwest, good luck, America. I mean, you just have to contain him.
Well, tomorrow, or today, if you listen to this podcast, is going to be a hectic day, or a split-screen kind of day, as I'll be trying to figure out how to, one, watch Bill Taylor's public testimony, and two, I'm sure simultaneously we're going to end up with Trump having his press conference with Erdogan at the exact same time. Maybe I'll have, like, one earbud with one, one earbud with the other, and try and, like, dual listen. That's totally possible.
And you know what the good news, though, is, as predicted, I mean, you and I were on the impeachment train for a while, much before Nancy Pelosi, who didn't even mention it in the summer. She compared it to Voldemort. But I believe I did share the sentiment on this podcast. A strategic reason I was always for impeachment is because all the major networks say they're going to be moving away from their normal coverage and covering the impeachment hearings. And that means the American public will get to witness it. And Trump, his main theater of war is what? Cable news. He is excellent at spin and distraction, but if all the news coverage is about this, he will be on the defensive. He can't control the narrative. And as we've seen in the past month, he loses his mind, gets more reckless and more self-destructive. The more they stretch this out and the more it's like dominates the news coverage, I think it's worse for Trump. That's my take.
So millennials will finally get their Watergate hearings this week. And what will certainly be a cultural moment for decades to come starts now. That's all for this week.
As long as they have to have really voluptuous women wearing skin-tight clothing dancing in the background, and then, you know, probably some guys shooting guns up in the air and some clowns. And then the optics will be good for people to pay attention and not watch Mandalorian.
See, I don't think I don't think that's even necessary. I think that this the reason that the networks are changing coverage to play the impeachment hearings is because the audience and the ratings are already there. So we don't need any of the bells and whistles. The tension is already on it. And we'll be back next week to cover everything that happens today.
Bye, later. Guys.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.